It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
Hello and Merry Christmas to all our GTCC members. To celebrate the festive season, we've teamed up with Exclusive Memorabilia, the only place to get my signed yellow jerseys and loads of other incredible sporting mementos. Use the code GTCC to get 10% off on everything at exclusivememorabilia.com, plus free UK delivery. Everything on their website is 100% authentic, hand-signed, and comes with a certificate of authenticity. If you're a big cycling fan, it's not just me. They also work with Froomey, Cav, and Bradley Wiggins. There's also incredible signed memorabilia across other sports like football, rugby, and snooker. My favourites are the Arsenal range and the brand new Alan Wynne Jones collection. So head to www.exclusivememorabilia.com and use the code GTCC for 10% off. Merry Christmas.
This is a Crowd podcast. I'm Geraint Thomas.
And I'm Tom Fordyce.
And you've just entered the Geraint Thomas Cycling Club, brought to you by Zwift.
Jump on your Zwift Hub 1 and jump into Zwift.
Welcome along.
Good to see you, G. How is the training camp in Mallorca going? So many surprises on those roads, so many roads you've not seen for at least a year.
No, it's going good. We're a week in now, end of a 3-day block, so I'm pretty tired. Had 6 hours today, and then got back, had to have a quick shower, quick skin suit fitting, and then, which I'm always a bit like, why do it in December?
Why do it in December? Doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, like some of the boys are obviously like, you know, race weight already, or like a kilo off, but, you know, let's face it, I've got about 5 extra kilo, so I don't see the point. But anyway, did that, and then, well, quick yogurt and straight on the blower to you, mate. Highlight of the day.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly. There's been a lot going on in the world of cycling. This is the time of year where riders sometimes move teams. Although in the case of one rider who Jumbo wanted, but Bora didn't want to let go, when riders don't move.
Yeah, that's all a bit wacky, isn't it? That Cian Utterbrooks. Utterbrooks means out of the pants as well, apparently. I'm not sure what Cian means. I guess you can...
No, I'm worried now.
...make that up. but no, yeah, that just feels crazy, doesn't it, really? To be honest, I know nothing about it other than... who's representing him? Like, who's pushing him? Like, because he's only 20. What's the rush? Like,
yeah.
Bora is a great team. Like, okay, it might not be the best team in the world, as in Jumbo, but it's still easily, I'd say, top 5, you know? I think it's, from what I've seen, from the outside, obviously, and speaking to riders, I think it's a quality lineup. So, you know, it was funny, wasn't it? Like, all the boys were talking about it, because, like I say, I tried to avoid social media, and they were like, oh, Jumbo's announced signing Cian. Cian. I'm not sure how you pronounce his name. Cian, I think. And then, like, a couple of hours later, Bora saying, no, he hasn't, he's staying here type thing. Just all the mess in it. Like,
it's a bit embarrassing, isn't it, for all concerned.
Yeah, and then, like, Froomey posts a picture and he's on the back of their group because he's obviously training where they're training, bumped into him. And I'm sure Froomey knew what he was doing there. Get a few hits on Sportster and all these Belgian sites, but just stirring the pot a bit with, he's riding with Israel as well. But, nice. Yeah, if... thing I'm like is just you could do with, I don't know, his mum and dad, like maybe they just leave him to it, him and his agent or whatever, but yeah, just, I don't know, a bit better advice, I'd say. I don't know his agent, I don't know who his agent is actually, so his agent's going to probably be hunting me down now, but you know, just, you know, he's young kids, like, doesn't need all this, you know, it's not really going to affect him in the long term, is it? But what's, there's no need for it either, so. But yeah, that's the sport these days, isn't it? All these young guys like signing 4 or 5 year contracts, and then weirdly, a lot of them speak to me. I'm like, oh yeah, don't really want to stay here for that long. I'm like, mate, why'd you sign for 5 years then? You know. But yeah, that's the world we're in now, isn't it? These days, so yeah, much simpler life here in Mallorca for me, Tom. 6 hours a day, nice. Sun's out. We got really lucky with the weather. I think it's the best weather I've ever had in December, to be honest. Shorts and jersey most of the time. 21 degrees, I think it was today.
Oh, delightful.
Yeah, so I don't mean to rub it in, but...
You are rubbing in a little bit, but I think I accept that. You got your Christmas party late today, have you?
We have, yeah. A bit lower key than last year.
Are you allowed to partake of beverages?
I'm going to avoid it a bit, I think, because I've enjoyed myself the last few months. You know, I don't necessarily need it. I'll have a glass of wine with the boys, but... I think I'll save it for a couple of big nights over Christmas and pretty much stay on it, you know. We haven't gone as big as last year either. You know, last year, me, Swifty and Luke with Three Wise Men. This year, just gone for a Christmas jumper, and I think I'm going to save it for a grand finale next year then. It'll be my last one, won't it? So, well.
Father Christmas.
Maybe. Yeah, or I was thinking just renting 8 reindeer and just riding into the restaurant. What do you reckon?
Can you get 8 reindeer in Mallorca?
Oh, I'm sure we can make it happen if we plan it, mate. Or donkeys, then. We'll go for donkeys.
They're gonna be cows with branches stuck on their heads, aren't they?
Yeah, or just a few sheep just like running around. But in other news, though, Tom, happy 50th.
I know. I'm closer to 70 than 30, and that terrifies me. And I'm going to try not to think about that thought ever again.
Oh, yeah, happy birthday. Hope you had a good one. Producer George, by the way, asked... for some birthday tributes as well for our listeners. So, do you want to hear some? Do you want to hear some?
I will. I'm going to blush, but unless they say something unpleasant, in which case I won't blush, so let's hear them.
Yeah, I think George only picked the nice ones. But so first one, here we go, from Verena B. Happy birthday, Tom. Always appreciate your thoughtful questions in the podcasts and your very smooth voice is a joy to listen to as a musician. All the best for the next 50 years. On and off the bike / microphone.
Oh, thanks, Verena.
Very nice. Next one. Steve Dawes. When you're on the bike, age is just a number. Just make sure the young lads know you've spent 50 years building an endurance engine.
Yeah, like it, Steve. Thank you.
And final one, because the rest were just abuse. Fiona Mundell. Life gets better after 50, I can confirm. Sending you a beer to down in 10 seconds. From the GTCC Herefordshire Road Captains, Fiona and Pierre. I hope she's not just saying that. I hope you do get a beer then.
I reckon I could definitely down it in 10 seconds, although Fiona and Pierre don't specify the size of the beer.
Yeah.
I've assumed pint. If it's like some double pint, if it's a yard, it's not going down in 10 seconds.
Yeah.
Have you ever done a yard?
Yeah, but... Oh, wow.
Did you forget to twist it? You got to twist it, haven't you, to stop the massive surge?
Well, I tried twisting, but it didn't really... It ended up mainly down me, I think.
This has got an idea for the next live shows, the crescendo to the next live shows.
Yeah, but in the meantime, I might send you a yard and you can fill it up with Fiona's beers. And you can do it on the next intro. What do you reckon?
Let's give it a go. I'll put some plastic sheeting down on the floor of my spare room. We'll give it a crack. Well, before we started Season 4G, we asked our GTCC members who they wanted us to speak to this year. And there's no doubt that today's guest was by far and away the most requested guest. We never let our members down. So here we go with Sepp Kuss.
Hey, Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Today's guest achieved something almost unbelievable in 2023 by racing all three Grand Tours in 1 year and then, incredibly, winning the Vuelta at the end of it. Already regarded as the best climbing domestique in the world, he's now a Grand Tour winner. So we can't wait to hear from the Eagle of Durango. I'm going to have to ask you about that. Welcome to GTCC, Sepp Kuss. Thanks for coming, mate.
Thanks for having me on, G. It's good to be here. Yeah. Always been a listener, but it's a privilege.
Oh, I'm sure, mate. I'm sure you're every Tuesday you're there downloading your episodes.
Yeah. I'm sometimes more of like a sound bites kind of guy, you know, like I get the highlights in,
Oh, geez, there's been plenty of those bouncing around in the past year or so. So
That's the world we live in now.
Yeah, lacking context, I feel, a lot of them. Yeah. But before we get going, and this Eagle of Durango, this is the first I've heard of that. So I'm guessing that's something to do with where you're from?
Yeah, I don't actually know where that one came from. I mean, I guess it's simple, and I'm from Durango, and I guess Bajamontes was the eagle of Toledo, and they went with that. So probably not the most original, but I think at least the Spanish commentators, they call me the Durango kid a lot.
Oh, okay.
Durango kid.
That's quite good. That makes you sound like a cowboy.
Yeah. There's been a lot of Western movies shot in Durango, because there's like an old coal-powered train still, and western vibe there. So
where is it, sorry, exactly? What part of America?
It's southwest Colorado, so it's like right, it's almost at the four corners of Arizona, Utah, New Mexico.
Isn't that one of the best places in the world to grow up, having spent a little bit of time traveling through some of those national parks? Like, are we a million miles from Zion around there and places like that?
I'd say it's like 7 hours from Zion.
That's pretty big.
You have
in America, that's close.
You have Moab like 4 hours away or 2 hours away. But yeah, it's really unique. It's like a high desert on the south side, and then all surrounded by mountains to the north and to the east. So it's pretty cool.
So you basically, you grew up there and you're going to do something that involves being outdoors. It might be skiing.
Yeah.
It might be riding your bike. It might be mountain biking, but it's going to be outdoors.
Yeah. That's the name of the game in Durango. I mean, there are always some, I remember growing up, there were always some kids at school or whatever, they're like, oh, it sucks here, it's not a big city, there's nothing to do. But if you're into the outdoors, and yeah, I think 90% of the people in Durango, it's a real way of life there to just be exercising and healthy. So yeah, a lot of sports to do.
So now you're in Andorra, right? I guess, and that's a similar vibe. That's outdoorsy.
Yeah, it's similar. I mean, it's different. There's nothing like you know, the granola, Colorado, real pure outdoors. But here it's it's close enough.
Yeah, and your house, you can see the climb that you won a stage in the tour in Andorra, right?
Yeah,
and you can see the final climb.
Yep. Yeah, I can see the side that we climbed up in the tour, and
what was it called again? That climb,
Betchelis.
Ah, yeah, it's a right bitch that climb, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's super steep in the beginning, and then
nice.
Good one to warm up though for a training day.
Whoa, mate! Yeah, terrible tour that was for me.
So Sepp, how have things changed since you became a Grand Tour winner? Like, are you now badgered in the streets? Do you have to don a false moustache and a false nose and sunglasses wherever you go?
it's hard to say now, I think, how much things have changed. I mean, I think not too much, but of course there's more you know, media commitments or things here and there, but it's also, I think, part of the journey of it, and part of the what comes with winning a Grand Tour and being in that position. So it's not something, I mean, I don't like being in the spotlight necessarily, but I can always appreciate the recognition and having these opportunities and being recognized as the winner of a race. That's always pretty cool, but try and keep it pretty low profile otherwise.
But you're 29 now, right?
Yeah.
So that's quite nice. Like, these days it's normally like you got to be bloody in your early 20s to win a Grand Tour, but I'm Roglic in the Giro, actually, to be fair, but nice to sky's the limit now, mate. Like, I won my first Grand Tour 32, so who knows what's next, mate.
Yeah, as long as you have the motivation and it's fun and you're progressing and not at some plateau or in some hole, then why not keep going?
Or in a discotheque every night, just living it up. Dom P flowing. Dom P.
How did it land back home, Sepp? Because it had been, the last decade had probably been a slightly lean period for elite men's road racing for Americans. So has it changed things back home? Has it kicked off loads of interest?
Yeah, definitely more. Actually, I noticed it already kind of after 2020, when, you know, there was that first kind of, not a renaissance of cycling, but, you know, people were, cycling became more of a thing again, especially in the US. It became more of a lifestyle sport or whatever, and people started tuning into the tour, and they would see me in the tour and say, oh wow, that's actually pretty crazy. And then then winning a Grand Tour, you know, the Vuelta isn't the Tour de France. So it's, I think for the really general public, it's a bit harder for them to register the significance of that. But it's definitely on the upswing. I mean, there's tons of other riders too in the classics and the week long races. And, you know, for the fans in the US, I think there's a lot of races that they can tune into now and have somebody in the US that's at the front.
Because it's kind of like a home race for you as well, though, right? The Vuelta, because you from when you pronounce some of those words earlier, you can tell you can speak Spanish pretty well. Is your missus, is it your wife or girlfriend?
Yeah, my wife, she's from Barcelona.
Yeah. Okay, yeah.
But she speaks better English than I do, so...
So, well, yeah, that was, before we get onto that, I've been told we got to talk about the Giro. We're going to keep it short.
You want to talk about the first 2¾ weeks, G, of the Giro, is that right?
Yeah, the first 19 days.
First 19.
But you, that was a dead late entry is the wrong word, but like Jumbo, there was a lot of guys sick, right? And they brought you in last minute. How soon before the race did you find out?
Actually, I was, out of almost half of the team that they had to redraw, I was probably one of the earliest that found out. So I think it was right after Catalunya they told me, because I needed to replace Wilco because he broke his pelvis. And for me, at the time, I thought, it's a bit short notice. You know, I want to go there and actually be good. But I had time to do a training camp before and, kind of wrap my head around doing the Giro. But we had other guys. I mean, we had Tom Gloag that was there. I think his flight landed the morning of the first TT. The UCI had to make a special exception to allow him to enter the race in the last minute. So yeah, it could have been worse.
Yeah. That's a young British lad as well, for people that don't know.
Yeah.
Hmm. So I'm quite keen to find out, Seb, because we've heard from G at several points over the last 7 or 8 months of his experience of the Giro and what it was like having Primoz just on his tail until stage 20. So give us an insight from the Jumbo team about what it was like when G's in pink and he's in the leader's jersey, in terms of how optimistic the team were, what the tactics were to try and dethrone him.
Yeah, I think, we were always optimistic. I mean, we knew how decisive that last time trial was going to be, just with how savage the climb was. And I had never done a recon or anything of the last climb, but Primoz knew, what it was actually like to go up that thing. And I think he really, really knew what was coming. So he had a lot of confidence for that. And, in the stages before, we were always just kind of, like you said, hot on the heels, bit of a backseat role, which I think was nice. We didn't have to do anything too crazy, especially knowing how hard that last TT was. For me, it was hard to say because everything was so close before that, on the stage before in Tsushima.
Oh god!
It was that last whatever 50 meters that took probably a minute.
Slow motion racing, wasn't it?
Well, man, yeah. And I was thinking, it's going to be super, super tight, and I don't know who's gonna come out on top. I don't think anybody did. So, I think that was the interesting thing with having such a hard TT right at the end.
Yeah, there's three kind of things that stand out to me before this TT. The first one was, did Primoz try and do like an Armstrong sort of bluff that he's struggling and then was really good? Because I remember something happened. We were controlling the race and then someone like, who's the UAE guy?
That stage. Yeah. I don't know if he was, I think he was just really checked out and overconfident in a certain moment, and just I was with him actually, and we just were kind of sitting back, and then all of a sudden there was this huge split, and we thought, oh shit, we're getting left behind here.
Yeah, because I can't remember his name now. No, the other one, Formolo comes to me, he's like, hey G, Primoz is struggling, he's at the back, he's struggling, and I'm thinking, okay, if he's struggling at this pace, there's no point in us going even more. He's going to be struggling at the end. I was like,
yeah.
And he's probably bluffing, mate. It's Primoz. He always says he's shit.
yeah, you never know.
Yeah. So UAE are like proper, like, I was like, if you want to up the pace, you do it, So that was one thing I wanted to ask. Yeah, okay. Then after that, I think he was good. He attacked, I think. It was so much lost time.
Because that stage he wanted to go for. And then halfway through we decided that we weren't going to go for the stage win. We were just going to try and do something, but initially the plan was to go for the win.
Was this the stage where we had a little descent? We'd had quite a tough climb.
That sketchy descent.
I gotta say thanks for that, because Primoz came around you quite quick at the top.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we did a real narrow, twisty descent. It was so hard to pass. And I remember I was like, shit, you could really screw me over now. Like, you could start going really slow, give him a gap. And I remember I was coming into a corner. I was like, right, I've got to pass you now. And I was like, sap, sap, sap. And I don't know if I came up the inside or the outside, but you let me past. And I was like, he's a nice guy. And
we both took a bad line. I was like, well, I think this is...
Because I was just thinking they could royally screw me over now. So yeah, I appreciate the fact you didn't let him ride off and just block me. So yeah, thanks. That's no what worries. I was cheering for you in the Vuelta, mate. And then what was the third thing I was going to ask you about? Oh, the stage, obviously, that Ayuso attacked. I went across to him. Oh, Almeida, sorry, I keep saying Ayuso. Almeida. Yeah, and a lot of people kind of said you saved Primoz's Giro there and then. It kind of, I wouldn't say 100%, but you went a long way to making it easier for him.
Yeah, I think it's always hard to say in retrospect because, you could also say, okay, but by riding a certain pace on the front, then I made it just a little bit too hard where he went just a bit over his limit. And lost ground, or could have also said, I didn't need to pull at all because maybe Almeida wasn't a threat in the end, but in that moment he was.
Mate, just pick yourself up. Just pick yourself up. It was all about me.
No, but I mean, it's nice to know, especially in that Giro, because to be honest, we didn't really do much as a team. We were never in the jersey, or we never had to defend the jersey. And of course you want to win the race in the end, but you always end with a better feeling if you say, oh, we did this as a team. We were on the front every day. We were fighting every day. So for me to have that contribution in that key moment was really satisfying because it was like, oh, actually, I really, really did something, you know?
yeah. Did he give you a nice bonus for that?
Yeah. Yeah.
There's something about your voice there.
No, I mean, there's always the prize money split that the leader or whatever decides to take or not. And then there's always gift that comes down the road. So. No, he's always quite generous with those things, though.
That's good to know. Not your typical Slovenian, then. I should watch what I say when I'm getting massaged by one.
What was it like, Sepp, on that final time trial on the Saturday? So I guess you're at the top of the mountain watching it all unfold. I mean, it was a ludicrous one to watch as someone who was just watching the race, but it must have been incredible having not only ridden that section, but then seeing all those various dramas unfolding.
Yeah, it was impressive. I think just due to the fact of the climb being so hard, the road surface, the crazy bike change, watching all the sprinters, go early and just crawling up this thing. I was like, this is...
It's almost not great.
I mean, for me, it's honestly the kind of climb that I like and I do well at. So I was, excited, I guess. I don't know if that's the right word for it, but, I just wanted to give it a go. I had nothing to lose. But I was more nervous for how it was going to play out between you two guys and, because I was always thinking like the stage 20 in the tour in 2020.
Yeah.
And at least this time I thought, well, Primoz is maybe in a better position because he's the chaser. He's not, he has nothing to lose. He just has to do his best and see how it ends up. But I remember hanging out there at the top and it was, it felt like it was a festival or something with all the people, beer garden and everything, and nice views. It was one of the few days in the Giro that you had a blue sky that you could see the surroundings.
Yeah, so true.
And yeah, when his chain came off and everything, that was a tense moment. I thought, well, it's only our luck that something like that happens. But
at least he was lucky. He had his mate there. Did he? Was it actually his ski jumping mate that happened?
Yeah,
to just
yeah,
be
it
there?
Was. Yeah, just total. Yeah.
Chance. But that's the thing. Like when, it was, when it's written in the stars, ahead. It's written in the stars, isn't it? Like. It's almost like he was meant to win that. Almost. Yeah, that's hard to say. Tell myself anyway.
Yeah, but also watching, it was so hard to tell who was going better or not because the climb was so slow that everyone is going at 8K an hour and the guy that's winning is only going, you know, half a K an hour faster. So you can't tell at all on TV who's, you know, everybody pushes a different gear. It's all... So it was interesting.
So then after the Giro, you're down for the tour. That was always a thing, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So what did you do in between? Like, did you...
I took a week pretty easy, I guess. I got sick again after the Giro. But I think that was the same probably for everybody. Which was fine because there was more time than normal between the two. And then, yeah, just kind of got back into training. Actually, it was pretty decent training load, like pretty hard training. But I felt really good and was calm because I knew how I felt in the Giro and I didn't have much more to do fitness wise or anything more to show really. So, it was actually, for me, it was a nice way of going into the tour because it's like, okay, well, we already won the Giro. I was there. I felt good. There's not that there weren't any expectations, but there's nothing more to prove.
I mean, it was such an eventful race for you personally, Sepp, anyway, the tour. G knows a thing or two about crashes, so much so that we don't use the crash word on this podcast. But you were pretty battered and bruised by the end of the tour, and you still had to do your job for Jonas.
Yeah, it was all good until I think, what was it, the stage before the
19th
second rest day.
Oh, sorry, no.
And there was a spectator that had his phone out and he wasn't looking at the peloton coming, and it was just as the last riders were jumping in the brakes. So I was just kind of on the edge of the road, you know, just trying to slow down, and then all of a sudden I hooked the guy's arm and then boom, went down super hard there. And that was the worst crash for me because it was really like a whiplash crash. And then the next day actually was a rest day, so that was good. But then the TT, and then it kind of all went downhill from there. And then there was the other crash with Carlos on the corner of the first descent on this, what was it, 20th stage. And then that's when I got my face.
Yeah, that was spectacular, gotta say.
Yeah,
but yeah, you were like top 10 though going into that stage, right? And then that crash, obviously, you lost a position or something.
I lost a position, but I mean, at that point I was just happy to be able to finish, you know. I didn't want to get to the stage 20 and then have to go out. And it would have been nice to be top 10, but you know, it's not what I was there for anyways.
And still, like, you still did a great job during that race. You're still one of the last climbing guys there. After the tour, surely you must be like, I'm done now, you know, ciao. But no, you wanted to ride the Volta as well, right?
Yeah. I mean, actually, when they first had me down to the Giro, I was like, well, I want to do the tour, but I also want to do the Vuelta is my favorite race. So I want to, it was like, okay, now I can't choose anymore. Now I have to do the tour, and then after that it'll be done. And then the director said to me, yeah, but it's not out of the question that you do three. So at least I already had it kind of in my mind, but I just wanted to approach each race, you know, one step at a time, and just going to each one as if that was the only grand tour I was doing in the season. But yeah, I was always motivated for the Vuelta, and you know, for me it was probably better to do the Vuelta than do I don't know, Tour of Poland or some of these one day race, you know, that don't suit me at all. And it was also such a unique season with the team, with the Giro, with the tour, and I just wanted to be there to try and do all three with the team.
Yeah, you must be tapped, mate. You're sick in the head. Like, the Vuelta is your favorite race. Jeepers.
Yeah. It's deeper the better for me. That's when I suffer less, you know. if they just took out the flat and windy stages in the Vuelta, then it would be perfect.
Oh. Could you feel, like, as the season went on, Sepp, could you feel something within the team? Could you feel this momentum building and this belief building as the big wins came in?
Yeah, definitely. I felt the momentum for sure, but at the same time, it's like, well, okay, I don't know how realistic of a goal this is, because yeah, of course we had all the riders to do it, but you need so much luck in every single stage of every single race. Everything has to go almost perfectly, and I was thinking, okay, at some point you have to run out of luck, you know, something has to go wrong. You have to be at one bad moment, and you know, that's not the right way to think, but a lot can happen. So had to be realistic, but it was also, yeah, exciting to be in that momentum and going into the Vuelta with, yeah, as strong or even stronger of a team than we had in the tour. And then, okay, that's that also helps.
Right, G, should we get into the Vuelta? Should we do this properly?
I guess the first logical place to start is that breakaway you were in when Dylan and what's the
other
one?
Yeah, there was Dylan, Jan, and Attila. We're all there.
Okay, yeah, all four of you. Because you rode hard as well, right? You wanted that gap, get a good lead.
Yeah, initially we rode hard, but then, yeah, from the car, they were always kind of calculating the gap, and there were also a lot of moments where we backed off quite a bit to not make the gap too big. They said, okay, we want it around, I don't know, 4 minutes or something at the base of the climb, not more, not 6 minutes or something. I can't remember exactly, but yeah, I think there were definitely some moments where they could have opened it up a lot more.
Did you want them to? We were like, come on, boys. Let's just get another couple of minutes.
I didn't really care. I just wanted to go for the stage win. Yeah. Yeah,
because I remember this day now, because obviously that's when Remco, he had the jersey. Yeah.
He had the jersey, and before that stage, they said they wanted to give up the jersey.
And it's ridiculous, yeah.
I think, then we also knew that they had a few guys that were with some stomach problems and everything. And we said, okay, if we can just go all in on this stage, see what happens. And but yeah, I think the main thing was that they said in the press that that we want to give up the jersey, and it's like, okay, well, this stage is not going to be so simple. It's going to be chaos.
Yeah, I never understand why you'd come out and say that. Like, you can say that internally, like, right, boys, if the right break goes, we'll let them have the jersey. But for instance, like what you did in the Giro, but you wouldn't come out and say, like, we want to give this away, because like you say, you're just asking for it to just be absolute chaos.
Yeah. It was, and like, I don't know, 3 hours for the for the break to go. At one point, I didn't know if I was in like a split in the peloton or in the break or in like if there was another break. Yeah, it was insane.
Yeah. So you end up winning this stage, taking the jersey. Who was your closest sort of rival at this stage? Like from the breakaway, who was the nearest?
Well, actually,
finalist?
In this one, I didn't take the jersey, because then Lenny Martinez went into the jersey. After that one, And I don't know. I think I was, a minute or half a minute back, something like that. And I took the jersey on 2 days after the Chore Tecati, the rainy one.
Okay. Yeah. Sorry.
Or it was raining in the beginning.
I've deleted so many of these memories out of my brain. I just forget. But at what stage then were you thinking? Well, then you did. When's the time trial come
so
into
that?
This?
Was stage 10, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So then you've got 10, you've got what, 30 seconds on Soler, you've got a minute on Remco, you've got a minute and a half on Roglic, you've got what, almost 220 something on Jonas.
This is after the TT?
Yeah, is that about right?
Yeah. So before the TT, I thought, well, it's cool to be in the red jersey. You know, I've never led a Grand Tour before, and see how far I can make it. But when I first had it, I thought, okay, eventually this adventure will end, and that's fine. You know, it's only right that it, you know, that I have a bad day or. You know, the fatigue eventually catches up with me. And then after the time trial, then I thought, okay, actually I'm going pretty, pretty good. Then I had actually more belief in it.
Yeah. I think at this point I got to apologize or at least eat humble pie or something. Cause I was like, nah, there's no way that he can just carry on. Like he's done two, like really well, like he's not going to keep it. But then you did this TT and I was like, well, actually, like he's going really well, like, but nah, he's still not going to do it, like he's done the Giro and the Tour, and then it was just like, it wasn't great to watch because I was actually there having to watch on the bike. If I was at home it would have been great to watch. You seem to just stay at that level, and like it wasn't until obviously it all kicked off on Angleroo, it all came to a head there. But it kind of, from my point of view, you know, don't want to go into politics of the team too much, but for instance, Vingegaard attacked the stage before Angleroo, right? Didn't he gain a minute?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And like Primoz got a lot of stick, but I'm not saying anyone's right or wrong here, but like, from Vingegaard attacking there and gaining a minute, like when you and Primoz are with other guys, you can't chase him with other guys sat in the wheel, because then that's even more crazy than what happened to Angleroo. So
yeah,
I felt a bit sorry for Primoz. He was getting all this heat. Both of them wanted to win. Both of them wanted to attack. And it's so easy to say, like, oh, best rider will win, kind of race the race. But it's not racing when you can't chase. So
exactly,
it must have been tough for you. When, like, sorry to keep going, but where was the point when you thought, like, oh, I could actually win this, I want to win this, boys, stop attacking me? Or was it kind of just day by day, it was just like, well, I'm still here? Like, how was it in your head?
Yeah. I mean, I think after, like going into the third week, we all spoke with the three of us and some directors, and we basically agreed that we would race, not race against each other, but you know, race against the the opponents, and in that way we would find out who was the best, which was fine for me because I was really confident, and I had no feelings that I was, you know, gonna have a bad day or let anything up. But that's also where it started, because then then you have three guys, and there's always, like you were saying earlier, there's always one guy that's gonna be stuck in the middle of that, because you have one guy that's in the red jersey, you have one guy that's a bit further down on time that has more room to attack, and then you have another guy that, yeah, depending on your moment, you get stuck in the middle and can't do anything, and you can't chase, you can't counterattack, and then it's really complicated.
Yeah, Great problem to have. A lot better than our problem of just not having legs, being shit.
I mean, just totally unprecedented because I think I didn't expect that the other rivals wouldn't really be in the picture.
Yeah.
And then that just made it, come down to three guys that want the same thing, which is also normal. And if beforehand we would have said, okay, yeah, we just keep it like this, we ride super defensive, that's one way to do it, but that's not how we did it. And there's no right or wrong, I guess, because we could never foresee what was going to happen on the day before Angliru or the Angliru. So
what's the best way in this situation? Is it just to be honest with each other and in those team meetings to be honest? Because, gee, you've talked before about some of the conversations that you had with Chris Froome on the Sky Bus in 2018 on that tour, where Froome made it quite clear that he, you know, and this was what, deep in the third week, made it quite clear that he still wanted to win the race, and you had to pretty much stand up for yourself. So is it an honesty, Seb? Is that how you, there's so much to navigate your way through in those situations. Do you just have to speak honestly?
Yeah. I think you have to speak honestly. And, you know, for me, it was a bit harder to do that because it was a position that I had never been in before. And I was surrounded by guys that win a lot of races that you know, not that they're more motivated to win, but they are winners. And I initially didn't feel right saying, okay, I want this, because I also realized that I was in that position due to our team tactics, which is fair, but I wasn't gonna put the winner of the Giro and the winner of the Tour in their place, not even knowing if I was gonna have the legs to do it in the end. I mean, I always had really the confidence on myself, but I didn't want to lay down the law like that.
Yeah. So going back to Vingegaard attack, like when you're in this group, because UAE didn't help in the way they rode. It's like, didn't Fisher Black like attack on his own as well? And like,
yeah,
it was just crazy how, because I saw this afterwards and I was like, why does he not pull for Almeida or Ayuso now? Sorry.
Yeah.
Like, it was close to the podium. Like, it would just baffled me that what they were doing.
Yeah,
to be honest.
Was,
but
for sure. Because I think Jonas attacked and he asked in the radio, oh, can I attack? I said, ah, sure, because someone will have to chase. So it's not bad, you know? But then when it was just a total standstill and UAE had all these guys and nobody was pulling, then I was like, oh shit, okay, well, I want Jonas to win, but I hope somebody actually pulls behind, otherwise what do we do? I'm not gonna chase him back. So yeah, that was a weird dynamic too, just hoping that another team brings back your teammate. You know, I say that in a good way. I'm you know, like I said, I wanted him to win that stage. There's nothing wrong with that, but yeah, that was a weird standstill.
Yeah, and then obviously you get to the Angliru then, and it was only like a K or so from the top that won it, where you got dropped.
Yeah, something like that.
So what's going through your head at that point?
Yeah, I think, you know, I was
bastards.
Just so...
Bastards.
Yeah, it was kind of a mix of everything. Like, it was like, you know, before that moment, I felt so good. I thought, oh, there's, you know, I can win this stage. This stage is the one that I wanted to win, this whole Vuelta, and I feel super good. And then, yeah, with 1K to go, they feel faster and faster. I'm like, okay, actually... I'm on the limit, you know. And then when I realized I was getting dropped, then yeah, I was almost like, okay, well, that's the end of the road for me, you know. This is what we agreed to, and I didn't picture it happening like this, but I guess that's what it's going to be. So yeah, it was.
But again, you limited your losses. You did, well, incredible. You lost less than 20 seconds from memory. Is that right?
Yeah, something like that. I mean, yeah, I still rode a good climb, but they were just going super fast. I mean, I think they did almost the record, the climbing record. So yeah, they weren't fooling around, but yeah.
Yeah, and then obviously there's a lot of talk around the team. Everyone has an opinion, don't they, and stuff. But I guess the team made a call then, right? To be like, right, boys, it's not long to go. This is what's happening.
Yeah, more or less. I mean, I think, yeah, after that stage, you know, you watch it on TV, you see how everything plays out. You know, at least for me, within the race, I wasn't thinking so much about like, oh, why this happened, why that happened. I was just trying to do my best. But yeah, when you watch it afterwards and you're like, okay, that's not really what we do as a team. And then for sure there's a moment where you just have to say, okay, let's rein things in here. What are we actually doing? Cause you know, there's still more stages to go. And if we do it like this every single stage, then what's the point of having a team or a leader or you know, so yeah, I think everybody was okay with a more unified approach.
The only bad thing with that though is like people then, well, I'm just assuming now, but some guys, I know what the public can be like. Like, oh yeah, well, so-and-so could have won, but you know,
yep,
only because they said that Sepp won. But like, I hope that you don't think about that at all. I'm sure you don't, but that's one thing. Like, you even get with sprinters, like people say about sprinters, oh yeah, but see the lead out he had. All you have to do is finish it off. Yeah, you try finishing that off, you fat bastard. Like, yeah, it's not easy, you know? And like,
yeah, exactly. Like,
from my side of view, point of view, mate, incredible what you did. Thoroughly deserve it and well done.
Thank you. No, I mean, it's true though. Like that discussion is also valid, but then at least when I think about that, I think, okay, yeah, but what about all the times that I towed them around, you know, or the year that I saved Primoz on the Angliru, you know? If cycling is this thing where it's like a caste system where, okay, you are a domestique and you are that no matter what, then yeah, maybe that's one way to look at it. But then then you say, okay, yeah, whoever has the leader's jersey is the leader no matter what. So so whatever way you spin it, yeah, you have to play within the realms of the team and and who's strongest too, which I do think I was the strongest in that situation, you know.
You had massive public support, Sepp, at that point as well. Like, if you spent any time on social media, I don't know if you do during races, you couldn't have missed it. And I don't know whether it was that underdog thing. I don't know if it was because people were blown away that it was your third Grand Tour and that you were still that strong, or maybe that it just felt like your time. But there was the whole GC Kuss movement. I don't know if you heard about that or tapped into it at the time, or you came into it later, but it was pretty remarkable to see.
Yeah, it was really, for me, moving at times to see that support. And you know, I was more focused on just the race and didn't want to get involved in the social media and stuff, because that's not why I do it either. It sounds self, but it's for me, you know. But it was also special to see people really getting into that story of it, because it is a really unique story you know, it's like from a movie, so that's super, super cool, and I think people can really get behind that, and I think it also brought a lot of different fans in, and especially people from the U.S. that can get really get behind that kind of underdog story or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, mate. Just to reiterate, thoroughly well deserved. Chapeau. One more point for me though. I heard I met Cole Kessler. He's in the development team in Israel. I saw him in LA recently. He said he was on the same flight as you, going back to the States.
Yeah.
And he said you're in economy, mate. What's happening there, bro?
Yeah, man.
There's keeping it real, and then there's keeping it real. Mate, get yourself in business. You just won the Vuelta, son.
No, well, actually, on that flight, we had our dog with us. And you can't put the dog in business class.
Oh.
No dogs in business class?
Not even Economy Plus.
What if you just paid, like, dog business class prices?
It's also
you must really love that dog.
That stings, you know?
I mean, the dog's not going to get stuck into all the free booze, is it? Is it? You wouldn't think so.
You never know.
Maybe
wouldn't think so.
Its owner's just won the Vuelta. Maybe it would.
But yeah, the dog didn't say a single thing. Not a single bark. Maybe one bark. So I think you know, it gets the stamp of approval, and next flight we can upgrade it. But yeah, you gotta keep your feet on the ground.
Yeah.
Then you really know when you're flying to the US. If you do it in economy, then
wow. Yeah. How long
then
was that
you
flight?
Count every single. I think probably. I don't know, 14 hours in total. I mean, worse than the flight itself is going through the U.S. customs, because there's 30 desks and three people working, and you're in this line. You think, oh, I have a 3-hour layover, no worries. And then 2 hours goes by, and you haven't even gone through the line yet. So,
yeah. Oh, American airports are terrible. LAX got to be the worst airport. Closely followed by Heathrow. That's terrible.
Charles de Gaulle.
Anyway,
yeah, they're all pretty.
Charles de Gaulle shit as well. Yeah.
Let us end on a happier note, Sepp. So, as we look forward to 2024, what's the plan? Because life changed for you in 2023. So, do your aims and your ambitions change in 2024?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, I think the ambitions are always the same. You know, I'm always motivated and just want to give it my best, and I think for me, just to keep it simple is the best way to go going forward. You know, I don't need to say, oh, I've done this, now I need even more or better. You know, I just need to get the best out of myself, and after this past year, I have more confidence. But yeah, in terms of the season, I think, you know, I don't know all the details yet, but I think for me it would be best to just do the tour. I really like the route, and of course go back to the Vuelta and be there with the defending champion, and just soak in that experience
and
get
my best. Back.
Yeah,
nice.
So pretty cool.
Well, if you do feel, you know, the need to go for the tour at some point, and you don't feel like you can do it there, I can send you a number.
Yeah,
happily have you on this side of the fence, mate.
Nah, you guys got some good up and comers.
Oh, we do, but you know, we can always add to that.
Yeah, you never know. We'll see.
Our quality. Thanks for your time, mate. Appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, thank you guys. It was fun chatting.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
He was good, wasn't he, G? He was really good. Like, he talked about the stuff that we hoped to talk about, and he also talked about the stuff that we thought he might not talk about.
Yeah, fair play. He was honest and just a great bloke, isn't he? I like Seth.
He's a good bloke.
Good guy. The one thing, though, I really hope he does sort of progress with his bit of leadership, you know, his stint in the leadership, because, you know, he said he wanted to go back to the Tour. Obviously, he's going to have to ride for Vingegaard there, and but he wants to go back to the Vuelta, number one on his back. I hope he gets a chance to try to defend that title, because he certainly deserves it. And, you know, maybe, I don't know, did he say he was there for two more years? I can't remember, but I think, yeah, future's bright, mate. Options there. As I said, doors open here. Doors open, mate.
He would be an amazing teammate to have. He strikes me as one of those Americans who's just always in quite a good mood, never gets a grump on.
Yeah. He was always sort of smiley and always just upbeat, wasn't he? And I think he's a great member to any team from that side as well, not just what he does on a bike. So, yeah, top bloke. And, yeah, great to have him on, wasn't it?
I think we should try and get him on our weekly Zwift Ride, G. 6 to 7pm every Wednesday. He's the sort of man who'd agree to those things. Are you going to be joining us soon?
Hopefully. It's just... It's busy here, Tom. Like, you know, I'm podding, but that's a joy, not a chore. But we have a lot of meetings as well. So there's generally always a meeting before dinner, which is 7 o'clock, which is 6 o'clock in the UK, which is, well, when it starts. So it'd be quite hard unless I get the turbo in the meeting room.
Massive respect from the team leadership when you do that.
Yeah, I'm not well.
They're talking over you.
Yeah, but of course, yeah, if I can, I'll be there.
Nice. I want to flag something pretty remarkable that one of our GTCC members, Martin Goff, is doing. So, this is the Herne Hill 500. On the 27th of December, 11 riders are going to set out to complete the Festive 500, which is when you try and ride 500 kilometres over the course of the festive period, but they're going to try and do it in a single ride. So, 500 kilometres or 311 miles, depending how you measure it, or 1,112 laps of the Herne Hill Velodrome, which is 450 metres long.
That's ridiculous, mate. That's ridiculous.
It's madness, isn't it? So each of the 11 riders has committed to raising at least £1,000. They're going to split that money between their chosen charities and the Friends of Herne Hill Velodrome, which is the club that supports the track. The track is going to be open for people to watch these 11 crazy people. It will be open from 1 in the afternoon till 8 in the evening on Wednesday the 27th and from 8 in the morning on Thursdays. The request from Martin and the team is to bring cowbells and to bring calories.
Well, massive good luck to them. That's, as I say, that's ridiculous. Like,
that's a very long way.
Well, I'm boring, isn't it? 1,112 laps and it's 450
meters. You can't
meters.
Even take those,
like,
off.
Oh, no. Yeah, that's... Oh, I hope they... Well, yeah. I hope, I don't know, got some tunes on the go. Got, I don't know. They're going to need something, aren't they? Because... Can people join them, or is it just those 11 guys just going around?
I think it's just those 11. Martin, if you're listening, let us know and we can give you another shout out next week. What is the longest G you have ever ridden in one session?
I can trump their ride, I think.
Is this your NHS special?
Yeah. Three back-to-back 12-hour rides on a bloody turbo. Yeah. Again, it was good. We raised £375,000. Pound in the end, Tom. That's pretty good, isn't it?
That's good, isn't it?
But then some old dude went and walked further, didn't he? Raised a load of money. Walked around his house or whatever he was doing, around his garden.
Well, that is another story with some subplots to it that we're now aware of.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, at least mine went to the bloody NHS.
And on that slightly controversial note, we'll see you next time.
Ciao.
crowd network, a place where you belong.